WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and U.S. trade partners will face matching tariffs on duties imposed on U.S. goods. President Trump signed the reciprocal tariff executive order, setting the stage for a potential trade war.
Prices could go up somewhat short term, but prices will also go down.
President Trump also explained his call to Russia's President Vladimir Putin before talking with Ukraine's leader about negotiating an end to the war.
Somebody said, oh, I should have called Zelensky first. I don't think so. I mean, we have to find out whether or not Russia wants to make a deal. I know that Zelensky wants to make a deal because he told me that, but I now know that Russia wants to make a deal.
Ukraine's leader says the U.S. comments that Ukraine should give up territory to Russia are premature in talks. RFK Jr. has been sworn in to be Health and Human Services Secretary. It comes just hours after the Senate voted to confirm his nomination. That vote along party lines, except for former GOP Senate leader Mitch McConnell, who was the only Republican no. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. A study of 2,610 Wisconsin high school football players found that wearing soft-shell helmet covers marketed as Guardian Cap helmet devices during practice had no effect on the rates of sports-related concussions. This is one of very few studies to evaluate how the caps perform in real-world conditions. Dr. Aaron Hammer, the study's lead author and assistant professor of orthopedics and rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, said, quote, "Unfortunately, we found that using these devices may provide false reassurance to players and their parents who are hoping to reduce their kids' risk of concussion." Head injuries were assessed by the team's athletic trainers, who also kept track of helmet models, cap use, and number of times a player practiced or played in a football game. Upon comparing concussion rates between the 1,188 players who did not wear Guardian caps during practice and the 1,451 players who did, researchers found no statistical difference between the groups. Of the 64 concussions sustained during practice, 33 happened to players wearing Guardian caps and 31 to those in the group without caps. The researchers advised that high school teams implement data-backed interventions to reduce sports-related head injury rates, such as employing athletic trainers and supporting rule changes to limit contact during practice. These interventions have been shown to reduce sports-related concussions by 64%. Additional risk reduction measures include training coaches in football safety, which halved concussion rates, and adding extra jaw padding to the helmets, which lowered rates by 31%.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
The Bucks pull out the win in Minnesota. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It went down to the wire. The Bucks holding on to win 103-101 over the Timberwolves. Doc Rivers challenged the Bucks defensively before the game to hold Minnesota to 100 points or less.
You know, it's funny. We set a goal and we didn't get it, but our goal was to hold them under 100. And they got 101. That's why the guys were like, no, yo, that was a goal for us going into the game. We knew scoring with the offense that we had out would be rough, but we thought we could really win the game with a defensive effort, and that's what we did.
So Milwaukee heads into the All-Star break in fifth place in the East with a record of 29-24. Baseball. The Brewers signing Tampa Bay Rays lefty Tyler Alexander to a one-year deal worth over $1 million. Meanwhile, Brandon Woodruff says he is on schedule to return from Tommy John surgery.
Listen, I'm healthy. I'm coming into camp healthy. I just have to take different steps than everybody else, and when I'm ready, I'll be ready.
That's Brewers pitcher Brandon Woodruff. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Sunny and cold today, with high temperatures only tapping the mid-teens and feisty winds out of the northwest. Slapping wind chills on top of that, making us really feel about 15 degrees cooler. And overnight, it's going to be feeling anywhere from 15 to 20 below. Then, a Valentine's Day snowstorm starts in the afternoon. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 15 degrees.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
Mayor Johnson, we used to have a saying called a switcheroo. Talking about one thing while behind the scenes there's a greater issue.
This man was elected president of the United States to focus in on making everyday life more affordable. But our push to remove lead service lines, our health department, are impacted by the things that the Trump administration have targeted since they've been in office. Yeah, it's been a huge switcheroo. It's not been about saving folks money. I mean, this is going to cause more pain.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Let's rock some local music this weekend on Max Inc. Join us as we welcome Kaylin Cole and Lexi Liu, plus Yanni and Rocker will stop in for a visit. It's Max Inc. Saturday to Sunday evenings at 6 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're all about real news and great conversation, and we're about to break some very real news. We are very pleased to announce that there will be at least one debate between the two folks that are running for Supreme Court that you will see on your April 1st general election ballot. Judge Susan Crawford and Judge Brad Schimmel have announced a debate to be held at Marquette University, sponsored by WISN Channel 12 right here in Milwaukee. And we are very, very pleased to have Judge Susan Crawford joining us. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Judge. Thank you for making time.
Great to be here, Maggie. Thank you for having me again.
It's been a busy day for you, to say the very least. You began this morning with a press conference in Green Bay. Why the press conference, and what information were you sharing with voters?
You know, we were sharing information about Brad Schimmel's failed record on protecting victims of sexual assault. When he was attorney general, there was a backlog of 6,000 untested sexual assault kits. They need to be tested for DNA. He got nine of them tested in 2 years out of a backlog of over 6,000. So we wanted to make sure voters knew about that.
I'm sorry, did you say 9 of 6,000, Judge Crawford?
Yes.
I sure did, in 2 years, yes.
I might have been a math major back in college, or at least an applied economist, but I think that is like less, what is that, like 0.1-ish percent of
it's
all
very,
of the
it's
rate?
Very low, yeah. Yes.
Don't look to me to do the math. It's a minuscule percentage, yes. I'll say.
Right. Absolutely appalling. Judge Crawford, I've got my friend, and you know Tom Paulswitz as well, joining me today. He co-hosts this show with me every Thursday. Tom, I wanted to give you a chance to ask the judge a question.
Yeah. First off, I find it fascinating because Brad Schimmel lost in 2018 on this very issue. So I find it interesting you had to do a press release to remind voters of why he lost to Josh Cullen in the first place in his attorney general race. But I'm glad you're doing it because it's so important to make that information and make sure it's out there. I guess my question to you would be is, you know, as you look at this race, we've had, almost year after year of these types of races, and they're a focal point across the nation. What do you feel is the big difference in this race compared to the other state Supreme Court races we've had over the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, I think one of the big differences is that, you know, my opponent, I think, is the most extreme candidate to ever run for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He has a history as a partisan politician with a record of really working very hard to take rights away from people back when he was attorney general. Things like trying to take away people's health insurance, take away reproductive rights of women, and failing to do the job of the attorney general, which is to protect the safety of the community. And, you know, the untested rape kits is one example. There are many more. And I'm running as somebody with a long history of working hard to protect the rights of Wisconsinites under our Constitution, under our laws, as a prosecutor, then when I was in private practice representing ordinary Wisconsinites in the courtroom, and now as a judge. And I think it is a very sharp contrast with Brad Schimmel's record, and I do think that sets this race apart.
Excellent. Folks, you're hearing the voice of Dane County Circuit Court Judge Susan Crawford, who is a candidate for our state's highest court. She's running against, of course, Waukesha County Circuit Court Judge Brad Schimmel, who was formerly this state's attorney general. Judge, I wanted to ask you a particular question because Mr. Schimmel has run ads criticizing your record as a judge when it comes to sentencing some pretty serious criminal cases. And one of the issues that I wanted you to talk about a bit, Judge, is that the discretion that judges use when they approach sentencing, what sort of factors you are required under state law to take into consideration. So I was hoping you could address that and contrast that against the objective fact that Brad Schimmel failed to do justice for 99.9% of rape victims in this state when measured by his failure to test the backlog of rape kits. One failure is a fact. One alleged issue in your campaign from Mr. Schimmel is attacking judicial discretion, something which you would hope Mr. Schimmel might understand. Can you please, again, tell us more about this contrast that you speak of?
Yeah. You know, when I'm in court, and I'm particularly when I'm making decisions about sentencing, first thing I look at is the need to keep the community safe. And judges throughout our state have a lot of discretion, as you said, Maggie, and they have to look at all the relevant factors in making a sentencing decision. They have to obviously look at what the crime is. They have to look at who the defendant is, you know, whether that's a person with a significant criminal record or they, you know, before the court without having any criminal record. Obviously, you need to protect the rights of the crime victim and make sure that the sentence is structured in a way to provide maximum protection to the community and try to make sure that nothing like that happens again. That's what I've always done as a judge in making sentencing decisions. And I think it's pretty ironic that Brad Schimmel is criticizing me for cases in which I sent people to prison for several years, followed by several more years of strict supervision by the Department of Corrections, and often cases in which I also ordered those people to be lifetime sex offender registry registrants. And if you look at his record, he has a history of giving very light sentences to people who have committed serious acts of domestic violence and has given light jail sentences or even no jail time in those kinds of cases. So I'll put my record up against Brad Schimmel's any day. He also had a history as a district attorney of cutting plea bargains under some really questionable circumstances. One case that we have brought forward, he made a plea deal with the attorney in a case involving a man who had thousands of files of child pornography. The guy's attorney was giving Brad Schimmel thousands of dollars of campaign contributions at the same time. That Brad Schimmel said, I'll cut a deal with you. You get your guy to plead to one count. Each of those files, each of those images counts as a count of child pornography. You plead to one count and we'll let the rest of it go. And, you know, I guess that the campaign contributions did the trick in that case.
Seems that way. Different question, Judge Crawford. What would you say are the biggest issues that Wisconsin voters need to consider? So besides the candidates and their backgrounds, what are the biggest issues that Wisconsin voters should be considering when they go to the polls for this race?
Yeah, you know, I think what I want voters to understand is that the Wisconsin Supreme Court every term takes up cases that involve issues of statewide importance. And that can run the gamut from criminal justice to fair elections and the right to vote, reproductive rights, two cases in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court this term involving rights of women to obtain abortions and other reproductive health care services. They can involve environmental issues, any kinds of issues involving all of our rights and protections under the Wisconsin Constitution and Wisconsin laws. So the Supreme Court plays a really important role in protecting our rights, and in some cases plays an important role as a check and balance against the other branches of government. You know, the Supreme Court is a backstop if the legislature tries to take constitutional rights away from people. So I want voters to understand that these races for the Wisconsin Supreme Court are every bit as important as voting for the governor or voting for your local legislators.
And in many ways, more important, because you can establish the law of the state for many years. You brought up the important role of the judiciary as a check on both the legislative and executive branches. Obviously, at the national level, Judge Crawford, we're seeing a lot of tension in that exact core founding principle of our country, that there are three co-equal branches of government. Meanwhile, back here in Wisconsin, we see Republicans not trying to give the voters of Wisconsin more ability to decide the laws of the land, but rather to further constrain voters' ability to decide what is good for them. I'm speaking specifically about the bill that was introduced to strip Wisconsin voters of the right through referenda to impose sales taxes. While avoiding any of those particular issue-specific referendum questions, Judge Crawford, I wonder if you could please speak to voters and people listening to you today about the importance of an independent judiciary, a nonpartisan judiciary, a judiciary that does not predetermine the outcome to cases that it will hear.
Yeah, absolutely, Maggie. You know, when the legislature or at times the governor have taken actions that infringe on our constitutional rights, we expect the courts to stand up for people and to interpret the Constitution and, you know, when necessary, overturn legislative or executive actions that are violations of our Constitution. Unfortunately, I think what we're seeing at the national level, certainly with the United States Supreme Court, is a real abdication of that responsibility. You know, we saw that with the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe versus Wade. 50 years of constitutional protections that women could count on tossed out the window. And that was because the personnel on the U.S. Supreme Court changed. They got enough hardcore right-wing conservatives on the Supreme Court who were willing to throw 50 years of constitutional protections out the window like that.
Can I ask you one last very quick question, Judge Crawford? We got about 30 seconds left. And my question to you is this. Can voters, unlike some of the nominees and appointees to cabinet positions, count on you to stay true to your words during this campaign once you win a seat on the Supreme Court?
Absolutely. I pledge to be a common sense justice. I'm going to protect your rights on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Excellent.
Thank you so much. That is Dane County Circuit Court judge and candidate for this state's Supreme Court, Susan Crawford. Our thanks to you here from the Maggie Dawn Show and Civic Media. We're going to take care of a little bit of business in our great discussion with Tom Paulswitz. My co-host today continues after these brief messages.
News from the center, WRCE.
No more mold, no more damage, no more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass-treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate.
Believe it or not, it is once again time for Wisconsinites to head to the polls and vote. I know, we all have a bit of election fatigue after 2024, but the spring election primary is coming up on Tuesday, February 18th. One race that will be on every ballot statewide for the spring primary is for state superintendent. Incumbent Jill Underley is seeking another term, and two candidates are challenging her. Jeff Wright, superintendent for Sauk Prairie Schools, and Brittany Kinzer, an education consultant and former charter school executive. Kinzer's candidacy, in particular, is gaining steam. Her campaign reported raising more than $500,000, far more than what Underley or Wright have brought in. With that type of financial support, this could prove to be a more competitive race for state superintendent than what we've seen in quite some time. This is becoming a real race to watch.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined, as I am every Thursday, by my special guest co-host. His name is Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics. He's a two-time congressional candidate, a Navy veteran, a small business owner, and an all-around nice guy. We got Jess P.S. on the board, and each and every one of you participating in this great conversation this afternoon. Tom, our thanks right to Judge Susan Crawford, breaking some news. Great to hear from her. Folks, you're going to want to mark your calendars on March 12th. There's going to be a debate between Judge Crawford and Brad Schimmel. I will be watching.
Yes, I will too.
I will, of course, have all of my thoughts for you the very day after that debate. And I'm certain that Civic Media will have some special coverage of that debate, which I hope to be a part of as well. So mark your calendars. General election April 1st. Debate for a seat on the state's highest court on March 12th. Tom, I wanted to get your temperature take, wanted to get your input on whether or not the Democrats should actually refuse to vote to fund the government if Republicans don't make some concessions, try to rein in the Doge and the corruption. What should they do, shutdown or no shutdown? And before you answer that question, I wanted to share with all of you, I do care very much about getting things right. One of our callers, a routine conservative caller, had called as Tom and I were discussing inflation, Donald Trump's irresponsible economic policies, which are already hurting the middle class, will continue to hurt the middle class. If you haven't felt the pain yet, you will feel it. It is coming. My friend CJ mentioned on the air, Joe Biden's inflation was 22%. Setting aside the fact that Donald Trump ran on making things cheaper on day one, and things are not cheaper today than they were on day one, and that we should be looking to hold the Trump administration accountable to its promises to the middle class. Setting aside the fact that the Trump-controlled Congress has introduced a budget package with $4.5 trillion in tax cuts for billionaires and our nation's 100 millionaires, while proposing nearly $1 trillion in cuts to Medicaid, nearly $300 billion in cuts to food programs, and nearly $330 billion in cuts to education funding. Setting all of that aside, I wanted to fact check CJ. First of all of the calculations that I saw that had any relationship to an inflation number during Joe Biden's administration being anywhere near close to 20%, we're only talking about grocery prices. And they were also cumulative inflation numbers.
Yes, so, cumulative.
Cumulative. So as an economist, I'm going to check all of this off right now. First of all, most people just look at core inflation, which excludes grocery prices, which in this country in particular are highly, highly susceptible to extraordinary volatility for a number of reasons. One is supply chain disruptions, which were a major deal in both Donald Trump's first administration, but equally in Joe Biden's, as well as the effects of industry consolidation all up and down our food supply chain, right? You look at how many grocery stores are out there, those conglomerates, we're losing them every day. So core inflation isn't the number that was that the 20% relates to. And right, reporting a cumulative rate or a cumulative percentage is intentionally misleading.
Yes.
That is straight up. I found the number in a Cato Institute analysis. Okay. It's the Cato Institute, which is a right wing funded, billionaire funded think tank that is meant to produce statistics that are confusing to people. So, CJ, check yourself. Do not present information on the show that is misleading to people. That was a cumulative inflation number restricted to grocery prices. It is a falsehood to say to people Joe Biden's inflation was 20%. It wasn't. Thank you very much. Moving on. So getting back to you, Tom, I wanted to ask you, should Dems support a government shutdown or not?
No, I don't think so. I don't think using a government shutdown to try to get your way on anything makes a lot of sense. Also, they don't have the votes. I mean, here's the thing, you know, and this is what I'm watching when it comes to Congress right now, is how are they going to take everything that Donald Trump and Elon Musk have been doing and build it into some kind of budget reconciliation package that they know does not need a single Democratic vote.
Right.
Right. So that's where we're at. That's where we're at to start with. So Democrats should not vote for whatever Republicans want to do at this point as a way to say, no, we're not voting, but they should vote no. They should not vote, if that makes sense, right? So they should just vote no, because if the Republicans don't have the votes and they end up shutting down the government, that is not because of the Democrats. It's because they don't have alignment in what they're trying to accomplish. So no, the government should, the Democrats should not vote yes. If it comes to having to pass a short-term resolution to keep the government funded, the Democrats should
another CR. No. Yeah, another continuing resolution. I spoke about this a little bit yesterday in Dom's show. I have really strong feelings about this.
Not sure what her real strong feelings were. She's for people to understand is that the party in charge right now is all about need to do whatever they want legally, not what they're currently trying to do legally. So, you know, as you step away from what's really happening, understand that the Republicans are going to have to, if they want to keep doing what they're doing, figure out a way to do it legally through Congress.
Folks, hoping I'm back here, and I will share with you my very strong opinions on this very quickly. And that is this. If Democrats want to allow the government to shut down, if they want to withhold votes, they had better make sure that the basis for their withholding is about the middle class and middle class economics, not eliminating the Department of Education. I'll fill in the blanks a little bit more after these brief messages right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm Stephanie Hoff, along with you on a Tuesday. You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report. Typically, on this segment, the commodities we're talking about are grown as crops. But today we're talking about something a little more shiny. Market advisor John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing says a popular precious metal is rallying in the market. It's gold.
Yes, gold has broken to new all-time highs here in this last few days with this most recent move higher. And again, this is just a point where gold is one of those commodities that people go into in terms of purchasing when there's a lot of instability, and it's a flight to safety for per se in that regard. You know, with the volatility that's come in with President Trump's programs and policies, there's just a little bit of concern where things are going to be. So a commodity that that money will move into is gold.
John Heinberg is a market advisor with Total Farm Marketing based in West Bend. We'll take a look at what grain and dairy prices are doing in just a moment.
There goes Pam Yonke across Wisconsin in her suburban truck. Thanks to Equity Livestock Cooperative, marketing your livestock, financing your operation, and supporting the livestock community since 1922. And to Cleary Building Corp. Cleary Building Corp. Built with pride before the shamrock is applied. Explore clearybuilding.com today. Keep up with Pam at MidwestFarmReport.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
Come on along. We're headed to the Canadian Rockies. I'm Pam Yonke, inviting you to join me July 26th through August 4th. We'll begin at Calgary's Living History Museum. Then it's off to Banff for a guided tour. Next, we board a Via Rail train for phenomenal views of the Canadian Rockies. Off to Vancouver for award-winning wines at Lulu Island Winery. Then we ferry to Vancouver Island to visit a bison ranch and a dairy farm. Go to holidayvacations.com, enter keyword Pam to get a brochure or watch a travel show.
On the close Tuesday from Chicago, grain markets closed lower, but only in the single digits. Cash corn down 7.5 cents at $4.84 a bushel. December new crop corn closed down a penny at $4.70 and a quarter. Cash soybeans down 6 cents at $10.43 and a half, and November new crop beans closed down 2 cents at $10.55 and a half. July new crop wheat down 2¾ cents, closing at $6.01 and 3/4. Currently, the March Class 3 milk contract is up 19 cents at $19.88 a hundredweight. The April contract is up a penny at $19.48. Class 3 milk goes to make cheese, which also closed higher today. Barrel cheese up a quarter of a cent at $1.81 and 3/4. The 40-pound block cheese up a half a cent at $1.90 and 3/4. And AA butter closed up a nickel at $2.43. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Sunny and cold today, with high temperatures only tapping the mid-teens, and feisty winds out of the northwest. Slapping wind chills on top of that, making us really feel about 15 degrees cooler. And overnight, it's going to be feeling anywhere from 15 to 20 below. Then, a Valentine's Day snowstorm starts in the afternoon. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 14.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Inflation has to go down. How would you suggest your president address that? He's not talking about the cost for Americans. Hell, everything he's doing seems to going to increase the cost for Americans, starting with trade wars with Canada and Mexico. So if there is something positive out of this administration, let me know what it is. I would absolutely give credit where credit is due if I see it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
This week on The Rational Revolution, our dear friend Ahmaud Rivera Wagner brings Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn to talk about January 6th.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm coming home now right away. I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm sorry now I ever went away.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie. You're listening to this, The Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I got a special guest co-host with me today, as I do every Thursday, as long as he's available. His name is Tom Paulswitz. He's a two-time congressional candidate, small business owner, and Navy vet. We've got Jess P.S. on the board, and we've got each and every one of you. Right before the break, we were talking about whether or not Democrats should give up a vote or two to keep the government funded or allow the government to shut down. My view on this is that Democrats cannot try to ask for everything from conservatives, and that they should get a laser focus on 100% opposition to more tax cuts for billionaires. Frankly, if they want to get into the nuances of some of the tax policy with a government funding package, hey, make some exceptions for small businesses, right? Like, we can craft tax policy however we want to. We want tax cuts for the middle class and working people. Yep. Yes, we do. Like, we can do all those things. Make a hard line, put a box around the Department of Education. If you put a budget up here that defunds the Department of Education, you're not going to get a single Democratic vote. You're going to have to do it only with Republican votes. And then we can point the finger at you when bad things happen to people whose kids in Republican counties, in MAGA voting counties, have yes. children that need IEPs, right? And right. that need school lunch yes. programs. So to really narrow the focus and the talking points around things that will touch the vast majority of Americans and then hold the stinking line. I don't like the talk. I mean, yes, you can address the lawlessness and DOGE being out of control, but that is meaningless to a regular person busily going about their lives. What they do care about is whether or not their kids can get a fair shot if they can't afford private school. That's what
exactly.
They care about,
you know, right? But I think the key here, Maggie, is that Democrats can't shut the government down, but they can help not shut it down.
Yeah.
And exactly what you had said, right? There have to be some conditions in place. But here's the thing, like, the Republicans can pass their reconciliation bill that funds the government for the rest of the year before the time we get to a shutdown if they want to. So the ball is entirely in their court, but it's going to be hard for them to get everybody on board for what they're trying to accomplish. So they're going to have to try to rely on Democrats, and it'll be really interesting to see what lies they will be willing to tell in order to get that vote where they want it to be and then come right around and turn it around. So as Democrats, I think got to hold fast to say, no, we're not helping unless there are tangible things coming from it.
Tom from Jackson, you've got some thoughts on the shutdown. Go ahead, sir.
I think it'd be a big, big mistake on the Democrats' part to do that, because I think they're playing into the Republicans' hands. And I think that the Republicans would, at this point, would welcome that. And it seems to me that they're intent on destroying the government at this point. For what end? I'm not sure. No good end. And certainly would not be good for common people. I think the Democrats are going to have to wait, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 6 months for the Republicans' current agenda to really show to common people what's happening. And I think by that point, he will be up in arms and very angry about what's happening, and that they'll be more on the Democrat side versus right now, especially here, 90% Republicans are in favor of what's happening right now. It's just insane.
Tom, I think you make an excellent point. One of the things that I have thought, I continue to believe Democrats are really bad at, is timing. And what I mean by that is, as effects, you can't get ahead of people actually understanding or feeling what's going on. If you are ahead of that, if you're ahead of public sentiment, I don't mean be ruled by polls. Sometimes you get a lead and you lead, and that's what it's about. But in this instance, there has to be some confluence of people's understanding and perception, the impacts reaching people, and the political opposition, right? Those can't be completely disjointed. If they are completely separated, it will not bode well. And Republicans, who are much better at messaging writ large, will be able to turn it around on Dems and effectively point fingers. this gets to one of the concerns that I continue to have. And Tom, I'm curious as to your thoughts on this. Where is the one strong voice of reason that is focusing Democratic energy? And it's stop arguing about the stuff on the margins. We need to get laser focused on corruption, upon trading away the control of our government to the highest highest bidder, read Elon Musk. Elon Musk is now the effective head of all personnel in the U.S. government by virtue of an executive order issued yesterday by Donald Trump. Why is it okay that the richest man in the world is going to decide who's hired, who's fired, and who gets a raise in federal government? That's stupid. That is not democratic. That doesn't help anybody afford their groceries or housing or buy the car that they want.
But Maggie, this is the new world we're living in right now. But I'm going to go back to you and say that I don't think Republicans are better at messaging. Republicans, their constituents hear only one message.
They have message discipline.
I don't even think it's discipline. They have a message in a vacuum. Which is why no matter what happens coming up with this continuing resolution, the Republicans will blame the Democrats, and Trump's followers will agree that it's because of the Democrats that the government will get shut down. So it doesn't really matter to them, right? So I've come to the conclusion that we're only talking to about 52% of voters, right? I'm saying messaging wise, right? So you have to be very clear on your messaging to say, all right, what does it mean? How does it work? You know, but the payroll of the federal government constitutes about 10% of the overall federal budget, right? So all this stuff that's happening about cutting people, right? Even if they get to 40%, which I think would effectively kill a whole bunch of different programs, that's still only 4% of the government that they've been able to cut, right? When you do the math, you realize that they haven't really cut anything. All they've done is crippled the ability for these departments to be able to do what they've been legally bound to do. That is the key. That's what's happening right now. This is not about fraud. This is not about waste. This is about corruption. And this is about wanting to kill the government, you know, back to, you know, if they can shrink the government far enough so they can drown it in a bathtub, you know, the Republicans finally win. And this is the beginning of that. So this is why this budget, this reconciliation package that the Republicans are working right now is so important, because this is going to codify exactly what's happening.
Folks, that's Tom Paulswitz, my guest co-host today. And every Thursday, we are all fortunate enough for him to join me. Yeah, I vehemently oppose a government shutdown pegged to this March cycle that's coming up because, the message has to be very clear that what we're fighting is corruption. We are fighting for the middle class. We are fighting for small businesses. We are fighting for equal access and opportunities for every child, no matter what income strata your parents may be in. And all of the things that Donald Trump and his minions in Doge are doing is actually not about the middle class at all.
Right. And Maggie, I would say that it's important for Democrats to extract the promise that the Trump administration will follow the court's rulings. All right. If it had a minimum, they can get the Republicans to say we will follow the rule of law currently until they're ready to change it. I think that would be enough to extract for Democrats to be able to vote for a continuing resolution.
I don't know what that means in practice, though, Tom, because the words are easy to say. We watched appointee after appointee say, in effect, yes, I'll follow the Constitution or sort of walk around that. I think the question is, are you Congress? Are you Republicans in Congress? If people in the Trump administration refuse to abide by an active court order that has not been otherwise stayed by an appeals court or the Supreme Court, what are you Republicans in Congress going to do to preserve the power of the legislative branch? Or are you just saying, well, if it's a Democratic president next time around, they'll just issue a bunch of executive orders and enjoy their immunity and start hiring gobs of their political loyalists? I mean, what?
Right. I would say, Maggie, though, that the funds that are frozen have to start flowing again, right? If those funds that are frozen start to flow again, then as a Democrat, I'd be okay for Democrats to vote for a continuing resolution until we get to a final budget.
We got Fred from Cottage Grove. Go ahead, Fred. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Good afternoon. this is not the new order. This, what's going on right now has been going on for thousands of years of monarchs and kings and...
Yes.
The
yes.
new order is like 200 years old now with your democracy in the United States.
Yes.
And for them to come in and just overturn everything we stood for is ludicrous.
Fred, I couldn't agree with you more. And since yesterday was Abe Lincoln's birthday, let us take a moment to reflect. Lincoln said this: the legitimate object of government is to do for the people what needs to be done, but which they cannot, by individual effort, do at all or do so well for themselves.
Here,
as public roads and highways, public schools, charities, pauperism, orphanages, estates of the deceased, and the machinery of government itself. He's describing what democracy, what its purpose is as a governmental system. And that is to serve the many in the ways that if we all simply went out and acted as Ayn Rand would have us, just in our individual interests, many of us would suffer epic ways. Can we afford to pave our own roads, right? To collect our own garbage, to filter our own water, to grow our own crops? Or would we revert to the medieval feudal system, which every system of government had this idea of the chosen select few? They used to call it the divine right of kings, a made up freaking concept to allow certain people to continue to extract all the value created from the labor of the masses for themselves.
Our country started that way, right? I mean, yes. We excluded certain people from voting. We, you know, we only allowed people to vote who had land to start. I mean, there were a whole bunch of different things, right? And we've evolved and evolved and evolved. And what's happening right now is there's a backlash to the evolution of individual freedom.
Yes.
And that's what we're seeing today.
And here also from Lincoln, he hated the idea of a tiny government that would only serve the needs of the very elite few. He warned this, yes, quote, "The same old serpent that says you work and I eat, you toil while I enjoy the fruits of it. Turn whatever way you will, whether it come from the mouth of a king, an excuse for enslaving the people of his country, or from the mouth of men of one race as a reason for enslaving the men of another race. It is all the same old serpent."
Yes.
This is what we're talking about. Does government exist to serve the vast majority of us, those who work really hard, or is government to be eliminated, shrunk down to its absolute minimum, regulations for regular people eliminated, so that the oligarchs of our time, the elites, can simply extract all of the value of our labor and hold it for themselves? Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
And reap tax breaks that we've never seen in the last 100 years of our country's existence.
Right. And as CJ, if you're listening and you're still out there, go do some research from the period of our country between the mid 1930s to 1981 and look at GDP growth and look at the burgeoning middle class in that time. That was the golden era of our country. And the periods outside of that are the ones where the oligarchs and the wealthy have tried to claw that back.
Yeah, and the steel magnates and the steel
right.
trust. The irony, of course, is that CJ's well-to-do position was built on the back of the New Deal. His
yes.
parents did well enough so that he could buy right. the house, or they could buy the house to generate the wealth so that his kids could go to college. He stands on the shoulders of the New Deal, of the very ideas
yes.
that he derides when he calls this program.
Always
every
true.
Day.
Yes.
Always. We got to take a little bit of a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that those that are cruel reveal the weak, the weakness of their mind.
One of my favorite subjects.
Yes, I've got Tom Paulswitz with me, Jess P.S. on the board, and each and every one of you joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
I'm coming home and never more to roam.
Baby, tell me you.
Baby, I'm for sure coming home. I'm coming home.
Coming home.
I'm coming home, baby, now.
News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people.
While attacks on democracy norms ensue in Washington, state legislatures have also been busy. We have updates from Utah, Kansas, Indiana, and the contested North Carolina Supreme Court race. Voting Rights Lab reports that the Utah House is considering HB 300, which forces mail-in ballot users to deliver their ballot not by mail, but by hand to an official polling place where an ID can be presented. The elderly, disabled, and other voters for whom returning by mail is their only option would need to seek special permission. HB 332 would withdraw Utah from the Cooperative Electronic Registration Data Center, the subject of far-right conspiracy theories. The Kansas Senate passed SB 4, which requires receipt of mail-in ballots by 7 p.m. Election Day to count, rather than the current 3 days after. An Indiana Senate committee advanced SB 284, shortening early in-person voting from 28 days to 14 days, ending at noon the day before Election Day. The full Senate passed SB 10, ending use of school-issued student identification as ID for voting. In North Carolina, a district court judge dismissed a claim by a state Supreme Court candidate that in a race he lost by 734 votes, as many as 65,000 voters were ineligible. A federal appeals court may revisit it. We've linked the Voting Rights Lab tracker at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Earl Ingram.
Mayor Johnson, we used to have a saying called a switcheroo. Talking about one thing while behind the scenes there's a greater issue.
This man was elected president of the United States to focus in on making everyday life more affordable. But our push to remove lead service lines, our health department, are impacted by the things that the Trump administration have targeted since they've been in office. Yeah, it's been a huge switcheroo. It's not been about saving folks money. I mean, this is going to cause more pain.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
We clawed, we chained our hearts in vain. We jumped, never asking why. We kissed, I fell under your spell of love. No one could deny. Don't you ever say I just walked away. I will always want you.
Always want you to listen. Every day from 2 to 4 p.m. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. And I want you to keep listening because Dom Salvia is up next on this fine network. He's got that great program that follows mine also every Monday through Friday, but his is from 4 to 6 p.m. Today, to close out this Thursday's episode, I got Tom Paulswitz with me, my special guest co-host on Thursdays, as well as Jess P.S. running the board. I wanted to talk about people that are cruel. Mm-hmm. And I have, since the new year, shared with people often basically what my three whys are. Why did I enter public service? Why do I get so fired up? Why do I try so super hard every day? Why do I care about the things that I do in the way that I do? And I have three. One, I have always hated bullies.
Yes.
And to me, bullies have always been very cruel. And I hate bullies. I hate the cruelty, especially when it comes from someone who is in a power, in a place with a lot of power, a lot of authority, a lot of wealth. I hate bullies. The second thing is I want people to tell the truth. I want us to do that fearlessly. I want to get things right. And thirdly, I want things to work better. And those are my whys. But in that space of that first why, I absolutely detest bullies, and I've always detested the cruelty that is always the stock in trade of the bully. I came across this past week the remarks by Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, a man of incredible wealth himself, his family incredibly wealthy. The governor of Illinois, he was the commencement speaker at Northwestern University in 2023. Let's take a listen to what J.B. had to say about cruelty.
The best way to spot an idiot: look for the person who is cruel. Let me explain. When we see someone who doesn't look like us, or sound like us, or act like us, or love like us, or live like us, the first thought that crosses almost everyone's brain is rooted in either fear or judgment, or both. That's evolution. We survived as a species by being suspicious of things that we aren't familiar with. In order to be kind, we have to shut down that animal instinct and force our brain to travel a different pathway. Empathy and compassion are evolved states of being. They require the mental capacity to step past our most primal urges. This may be a surprising assessment because somewhere along the way in the last few years, our society has come to believe that weaponized cruelty is part of some well-thought-out master plan. Cruelty is seen by some as an adroit cudgel to gain power. Empathy and kindness are considered weak. Many important people look at the vulnerable only as rungs on a ladder to the top. I'm here to tell you that when someone's path through this world is marked with acts of cruelty, they have failed the first test of an advanced society. They never forced their animal brain to evolve past its first instinct. They never forged new mental pathways to overcome their own instinctual fears. And so, their thinking and problem solving will lack the imagination and creativity that the kindest people have in spades. Over my many years in politics and business, I have found one thing to be universally true. The kindest person in the room is often the smartest.
I think as we roll into Valentine's Day and yes. we consider these major policy questions, I think it's incumbent upon us as citizens, but especially upon those who consider themselves people of faith, who may even call themselves Christians, to think about who they are treating cruelly and who they are treating with kindness. And does it reveal something about your own biases? Your thoughts, Tom?
Well, and that is the exact filter I've been using to watch the last 3 weeks.
Mm.
Is really looking at, did it have to be done in this cruel way if you really wanted to move toward what you think was whatever you describe as a mandate, right? Because all of this could have been done over time, fair warning, given people an understanding of this is where we're going. But to me, the purpose of the cruelty was create fear.
Yeah.
And
to
that is the most
fear and to punish.
And to punish. And to me, that is the most disappointing thing that more people aren't seeing and are disgusted by. Because to let people die, to leave food to rot, to upend people's lives just because you can, that's not leadership.
It's shameful.
Yes.
And it's stupid. In J.B. Pritzker's words, the cruelest people are often the biggest idiots. I don't care how many billions you have. If that's your modus operandi, I say shame on you. But let's end with some thanks. My thanks to Tom for joining me this afternoon. My thanks to each and every one of you. My thanks to you, Jess, my senior producer, Jamie. I've got a couple days off coming up, so have a wonderful long weekend if you are fortunate to have some time off. We got a very special pre-record for Valentine's Day for you tomorrow, folks. You're just going to want to check that content out. My name is Maggie Dawn. You got Dom Salvia up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together against cruelty and for love and respect.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, we will recap the status of the Trump administration's multiple court cases. Plus, why don't Republican elected officials want federal cuts in their states? Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Inflation has to go down. How would you suggest your president address that? He's not talking about the cost for Americans. Hell, everything he's doing seems to going to increase the cost for Americans, starting with trade wars with Canada and Mexico. So if there is something positive out of this administration, let me know what it is. I would absolutely give credit where credit is due if I see it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and a new legal effort to stop the Government of Efficiency Office from shuttering agencies and funding.
The lawsuit's been filed in federal court in Maryland by more than 24 staffers and contractors at USAID who claim their lives have been upended by Elon Musk and his Doge team. The suit seeks the reversal of Musk's and Doge's actions and a formal determination by the courts that they're operating in violation of the Constitution. The filing alleges a violation of the Appointments Clause, noting that no one at Doge is serving in a role created by Congress, nor have any of them been confirmed by the Senate.
ABC's Stephen Portnoy. President Trump signed an executive order today on reciprocal tariffs with its trading partners, saying the U.S. will impose the same amount of duties that other countries add to goods. The president hosting India's leader today at the White House. Heavy rain in Southern California and up and down the coast could lead to flooding on those burn-scarred areas in L.A. County, and another round of snow and ice on the way in the Northeast and Midwest. This is ABC News.